Fly away like Michael Keaton in the sky.
I'm glad we avoided the obvious joke.
Was that the obvious joke?
No. I'm glad we avoided the obvious one.
Which I'm sure is about to come out.
It's not. I would totally not. Birdman!
Oh, yeah, that was good.
Is that the obvious joke?
Hanna-Barbera?
Oh, Harvey Birdman.
Yeah.
I would like to see a live-action Harvey Birdman movie, for the record.
But that's not what this is.
No, this is not what this is at all.
Hey, guys.
It's kind of, admittedly, there is a bit of a meta reference to a Michael Keaton previous superhero role.
Oh, really? What's that one? What's that, Chris?
Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it keeps getting funnier every single time I see it.
Not to mention the fact you're talking to a dead guy.
You've seen it a few times, though.
Oh, so many times.
We are talking about the new 2014 film Birdman. I am Chris.
I'm Brian.
JC.
Michael.
And this is directed by Alejandro Gonzalez, and I never know.
Inarritu.
Inarritu, who did such films as 21 Grams and Babel. It's like one of those guys that every year he makes a film, or every couple years makes a film that plays Cannes and everybody talks about it, but never really elevates to that next huge level. He's always kind of stayed on this almost there level as a director.
I like to use the word elevate considering the first scene of this movie.
Yeah. But to me, this is that movie for that director. This is the one where I'm like, okay, this is the one people are going to remember you for.
Yeah, and if no other reason, then this is... what I like about Birdman is that it is pure zeitgeist. Like, this is a movie that entirely exists, in my opinion, as a reaction to the kind of... permeation of blockbuster culture, like to the point where like blockbuster movies aren't just big business anymore, but they've started to kind of dominate all pop culture discussions, and you know, things that were niche interests have become part of the mainstream, and it really is just becoming a huge deal. And I think one of the things I like most about this movie is how it deals with that and how it is kind of a reaction to that, more so than anything I've seen since, I always kind of look at 2008 as the start of the kind of superhero movie revolution, and how that stuff started to become really, really, really ridiculously big business. And, I think this is the first movie since then that has really kind of confronted it in a way that's not, I don't know, like, I don't think they're bitter about it, but it definitely holds it up and is confrontational about it.
There's cynicism about this, to be sure, about that sort of thing. I mean, this is certainly one of those, a movie about movies to some level, or at least a movie about show business, of which there have been many great ones made in the past, like The Player or what have you, even Sunset Boulevard, really, in its own way. And this has that idea of like an aging guy. Michael Keaton plays Regan Thompson, who at one point played basically Batman, except it was a character named Birdman. And it's been years. He refused to do a fourth film because he thought it was getting too silly, and nothing really happened in his career after that. And now he's on Broadway. He's got a chance. He's got this play he's writing, directing, starring in, that's based on a short story from a really like well-known short story, arty type author. And he just wants this to work, and he knows it's his last chance. And he's stressed out to the point that he is hearing his own voice, but as the character of Birdman in his head, telling him he's not going to amount to anything.
It would be like if Christian Bale was followed around by a voice that was like, "Where are you going?"
Yeah, all the time.
Except that Keaton's voice is much, much better.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. He does a better Batman voice as Birdman.
He does. I thought about that.
It's so good. Every time he was talking in that voice, it was just like, more.
I was like, wow, you could play Batman in a Dark Knight Returns adaptation now. But not only that, we're not really sure. Is he hallucinating? Is it really happening that he seems to have telekinetic powers and can move stuff around with his mind? Now forget all of that, because it really is just a sideline to what the story is actually about, which is his relationship with the other people on the set of this thing, who are trying to make this thing to come together, and everything is really falling apart at the last minute. Like Zach Galifianakis, who plays his best friend and stage manager, Jake, or Ed Norton, who plays Mike, who's the last minute replacement he got for the secondary lead role in this play, who is a self-important, pretentious prick of an actor.
He reminded me of what would happen if James Dean was an actor now, because he has this whole like obsession with method to the point that you're just like, get the fuck over yourself.
Seriously.
And it's like in the 50s, when method was a brand new thing, James Dean was kind of revered. But I keep thinking about what would happen if James Dean started as an actor now, and I feel like he would be Edward Norton in this movie.
Naomi Watts plays the lead actress, who's kind of neurotic and even obsessed with herself in her own way as well. Emma Stone is the daughter of Michael Keaton, who's fresh out of rehab, basically playing Lindsay Lohan, funny enough.
Emma Stone playing Lindsay Lohan.
Who's really fucked up and nobody likes her on the actual stage. There's a very funny scene where Naomi Watts is talking shit about her, not realizing she's standing right there. And, you know, assorted some other actors here and there that you'll recognize, but this is the primary cast is watching, like, the Michael Keaton's, you know, boiler on the stove start to bubble and bubble over, and you're going, what the fuck is going to happen here?
Yeah.
See, so to go back to the initial conversation about how this movie is clearly speaking out against the superhero blockbusters coming out, didn't it bother you guys that the majority of this movie was just milking a single mechanic? It was just a gimmick the whole time?
Not at all.
Oh, that bothered the hell out of me.
Actually, I found it kind of genius. No, as far as I know, no one has ever attempted to make a film that at least appeared to be one single continuous shot. Sorry?
What about Rope?
Well, okay,
but that's a bottle movie, though.
But let me
a movie that actually moves around and goes to different places and goes all over the place.
Now that I know that that's the gimmick you're talking about, I'll tell you exactly why it didn't bother me. Is that this is specifically a movie about putting on a play,
right? Mm-hmm.
And to me, it actually serves a purpose beyond being a gimmick. It serves the purpose of kind of blurring the line between, you know, that guy's theatrical presence and what he's like. Because the whole movie, there's a character that bothers him about the idea of truth. And are you really being honest with yourself on stage? Are you really, you know, being truthful? Are you really getting to the heart of what this material is about? And so I think it's necessary for us to kind of have as little division as possible between the character he's playing on stage and the person he is in real life. Yeah. Because there are so many similarities between the two. So for me, the visual gimmick was really trying to establish a theatricality to film that we haven't seen since something like Rope, which is based on a play as well, so it made sense for that movie too.
And I'll say this, it's fair to denigrate something used as a gimmick if you're not really doing anything innovative or new with it, which you can't accuse this film of doing. Yeah. It does stuff you've never seen anything like at all with technique, with doing this, with the idea of being able to let the story move forward in time while still continuing in that. I mean, it's quite honestly, I found to be just, you know, like goosebumps beautiful at points, the decisions they made with the cinematography.
Plus, I mean, like, gimmick or not, I think it was obviously an intentional choice to do that, and it felt like, to me, the reason why is you're watching this guy go through this, he knows it's his last shot, it's an extremely stressful situation for him and everyone involved, and the side effect, if you will, of these, you know, essentially being one long take after one long take, is it just ratchets up the tension for everything that you're seeing, and it just kind of gets to, like, there are almost no points of release.
I agree,
like,
with that. That's kinda, also, you. It kind of puts you, even like Brian said it as well, but you're right, that adds to that, the idea of, like, being in Keaton's shoes, or the idea of, like, this is just that much more stressful because there are no breaks. There is no chance to get away from it. Yeah, it just doesn't stop.
You're almost not able to let out a breath of relief until Michael Keaton does, which there are, and those are kind of the few moments where there's probably a dissolve in the edit and things like that. And like those, that's why I felt like it felt like a necessary choice to me because of that.
Yeah, to me, it just felt super distracting. I couldn't,
so to speak.
I couldn't get
super distracting.
Yeah, see what I did there?
I couldn't get it out of my mind for at least the first hour and 15 minutes of the movie. It just kept bothering me. I kept seeing I don't even want to bring up specifics, but I kept seeing people like minutely drop lines and go, well, yeah, if this were, you know, actually a movie that they would cut between scenes, they would have just reshot this, but they didn't.
Like once or twice.
Yeah. And it's the kind of thing where I understand that that happens in a situation like this. And when you're shooting a 45 minute take, that when somebody drops a line and then picks it up right away and plays it off really well, you're just going to go, you know what? That's fine. That's natural. That's how people talk.
Well, it's not to put too fine a point on it, but that's also what happens in theater all the time.
Yeah, but at the same time, if the movie is supposed to be talking about this, you know, I guess I understand your point. That is a good counterpoint to what I'm saying. But
I mean, if it's naturalistic, then I don't understand what the problem is.
It took me out of it.
If it takes you out of it, it is problematic.
It didn't feel natural. It felt like a mistake. And for me, like I was saying, with the continuous takes being so distracting, I just kept noticing things that would have been improved had they just cut up fewer cut it up into fewer takes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or maybe given it one more college try. I feel like if you're going to do something this ambitious, it better be fucking perfect. That's how I feel. I feel like if you make a small mistake in a huge situation like this, just fucking do it again.
I mean, I watched this whole thing and there was never a moment that I felt like, oh shit, they fucked up the take of that, and they would have. I felt like it was just normal people. I mean, sometimes you watch something like Glengarry Glen Ross, and I get taken care out of this brilliant script and this brilliant acting because I'm like, nobody talks that perfectly for that long.
Sure. No, I'm with you.
You know, or a Quentin Tarantino movie. This actually, that the aspect that people were stumbling, there was a bit of like more of, you know, it not being absolutely feeling like a script.
Yeah.
Was, it felt that much more real to me. And I can't help but imagine that that was the intent.
It feels that much more autobiographical. Yeah. I think. And I think it's interesting. I hadn't thought about it, but you know, when you start thinking about the movie, Sunset Boulevard, I think this may be the Sunset Boulevard for superhero films.
Oh yeah.
Where it's not a, and it's interesting. It's an interesting new angle to that because the person who is lamenting, the fact that his craft has been, and actually, honestly, it's the theater critic character who really is sort of the Sunset Boulevard lead, who's sitting there and saying, you know, like, you know, we had faces, like, and it's funny when you think about that line in the context of a superhero film because you have faces, but they're behind masks, and I really think that's interesting. And meanwhile, you have a character like Michael Keaton, who's almost like Willie Loman, who almost doesn't even realize that everything has passed him by. He's still trying to hold on to a different age, to a different appreciation, a different zeitgeist. And I really, yeah, the more I think about it, the more kind of enthralled, but I want to see it again now. Yeah.
Show me here again where this movie touched the theater geek in you.
it was right in this general area.
One thing that's really interesting, and one of the first things you touched on is, like, this is going to be the movie that Alejandro is kind of remembered for. And it's been in wide release, or limited release, for a couple of weeks now. It's not breaking records, but it's doing extremely well for being in limited release. And yeah, it's the fact that it's kind of the anti-superhero movie, plus it being the one that he might be remembered for. And like this promo screening, I couldn't find a parking spot in the garage because it was so full. Yeah. And it's just like, this wasn't the type of
movie. They had to turn over 100 people away.
Yeah, this wasn't the type of movie that I thought, like, that, like, those are Avengers type numbers that didn't get turned away in a promo screening.
And yet the effects and the sheer visceral, like, motion of the dynamism of this film is comparable to an actual superhero film, just not the same kind of dynamism or effects. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, wow, I was glued to this right from the start, and it moves so quickly. And the, you know, there's actual real drama, life altering drama going on.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny that, like, I don't 100% agree with Iñárritu's points about superhero movies. He, in real life, has said some stuff that I thought was about this that I was like, calm down. Okay. You know, like, there shouldn't be any more. They're all, he called them all far right wing movies of the conservative right trying to figure. I was like, dude, calm down.
Via one of his characters, the film critic character who is kind of his mouthpiece. Yeah. That's the one. If I had a problem with this movie, it was that she says some things about those type of movies that, like, I understand where someone who is entrenched in the world of theater and really loves that world would think that.
Sure.
But it's really unfair. Like, she calls them pornography. And not only is that unfair to the genre, but it kind of makes, like,
She was echoing Pauline Kael, to be sure.
Her agenda makes, I think, all critics look like just assholes.
Well, like, the idea that, like, I have always said, you shouldn't even be a critic if you cannot go out there and put yourself in the scenario of trying to appreciate a film based on what the type of genre is, based on what you're given. If you go into a superhero film and you go, this is stupid because superhero movies are stupid, you should stop being a critic right now.
Yeah.
Because that is not the job for you. Mm-hmm. you have to be able to open yourself up to these other things. And this is someone who's like, no, I am absolutely not going to like this sort of thing because I've already decided I'm not going to.
Believe it or not, and it may be tough for some of you to believe, we never go into a film wanting to hate it. Because that's like saying we really want to waste 2 hours of our lives.
Right. Yeah.
We may dread.
I'm not that malicious.
We may dread certain films. We may have expectations. But we never go into a movie with an agenda of, nope, we're going to hate this no matter what. Because honestly, like, if that were the case, like, I would have hated the Lego Movie. I would have hated 21 Jump Street. Like, these are movies.
The best screenings are the ones that you go in convinced are probably not going to be good, that completely surprise you.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. So there's a difference, I think, between having lowered expectations and maybe even dreading a film to a certain degree, than just out and out deciding before you go in, no matter what, I'm going to hate this. And I think, like I said, if I have a problem with Birdman, it's that the theater critic character feels like she's not only representative of Inarritu's feelings on superhero films, but almost representative of film criticism as a whole, which I felt a little bit unfair. But yeah. Again, I think it's just because he and I, like you and him, don't see eye to eye on certain philosophies.
And yet I still appreciate everything else going on in this film, with the idea of, from the viewpoint of someone who actually wants to create something more of a traditional art form, to try something really new, the fact that the franchises are dominating the cinema. Hell, they're dominating Broadway now. I mean, it's almost impossible to get a play produced that's not, like, based on a movie or some previously existing thing.
He even says so much without actually saying so, because he inserts Spider-Man into a shot at the end. Mm-hmm. Right?
There's also a poster for Superman Returns behind him, which I thought was funny, because it's like, wait, that's old.
I don't think that makes those films bad. I think it makes it bad that we've created a culture that's not interested in exploring beyond immediate gratification films.
Sure.
And I felt like that's the differential between Inarritu and my opinion about these things. But that being said, he says what he what he wants to say with this film with remarkable, I guess delicacy isn't the word. It's infectious to watch him make his point as it goes along, as he's bit by bit shows the position that Michael Keaton's actor is really in, the madness he's been driven to, the hyperbolic, you know, in the scenario madness. And Keaton's just, I mean, the best performance of his life, I think, here in this role. I mean, you just really feel for this guy as he is disintegrating. And yet there's a part of you who loves those superhero movies, and I wonder if this is intentional, that's rooting for him to actually be secretly a superhero
this
whole time.
This, honestly, is the most insightful, self-deprecating, and just kind of soul-bearing movie I've seen since JCVD.
I really feel sorry right now more than anything for Michael, who I know does not agree with us on any of this.
Yeah, I don't.
Any of this, like, ass-kissing we're doing to this movie.
I don't know.
I want to hear him go off for a while.
Yeah. Well, okay, so I'm really glad you brought up JCVD, because I thought that compared to this movie, was just outstanding. I love JCVD. I think that compared to Michael Keaton's performance in Birdman, just made way more sense. I get the comparison between Michael Keaton, Batman, and Reagan and Birdman. I get that. I understand
that. You can't miss that part.
Yeah. I felt like this movie, as much as the movie was the camera going around, you know, picking up different scenes, it felt like rambling. I felt like it wanted to go somewhere. And I know that part of it is because of Reagan's character being, you know, he's unable to dedicate directly to where he's going. He knows where he wants to end up, but not exactly the path to achieve it. And so part of it can be attributed to that, but I felt like with the camera just kind of walking around and hovering in some places, it felt like rambling. I felt like the last act of this movie was the last two seasons of Lost. I felt like,
who was the smoke monster?
Apparently a big iron bird. I felt like...
They call those airplanes, Mike.
Yeah. I felt like the special effects when they start... The special effects at the beginning, the very opening scene. And then obviously a lot of... I don't want to disagree with the interesting camera stuff that they did do, that they did manage to accomplish, because it was absolutely unbelievable. I just didn't feel like it needed to be done continuously. But I felt like the special effects were another thing that the movie was trying to make a point about, how, you know, superhero movies are all these big budget, look at all these special effects, and then they went ahead and did it and did a poor job. And that bothered me. Like, certain, when you're trying to criticize a genre, I think that you need to take a look at what you're creating and make sure that you're not doing it worse than them.
Ooh, see, I just can't. I mean, I understand at least where you're coming from with a lot of your points. I mean, we have a different perspective, but at least I understand where you're coming from. With that one, I'm like, I don't see that at all.
You didn't?
I
mean, you thought the special effects were, like, on point?
The special effects were
even when
phenomenal.
Even in the scene where he was walking with Birdman behind him.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Interesting. They were exactly what they were supposed to be.
Okay.
Like, I never thought for a minute.
I thought those were good. I thought the special effects when he's envisioning a spectacle sequence from a superhero film were even better.
I think that was stronger than the other part, but I feel like neither were. Mm. I felt like I understood their insertion into the plot. But like I said, if you're going to do that, you have to fucking do it. That's how I feel about this whole movie. And it sucks because to show the other side of the coin that you just brought up about going to these screenings, I was pumped as hell to see Birdman. And by an hour in, I wanted to leave.
Oh.
And the whole point for me was just like, I see that you're criticizing this genre, this zeitgeist of, you know, big blockbuster movies, but don't play with them if you can't beat them.
I'm not saying
that it's the same genre. I'm not saying that, you know, Birdman can go right alongside Winter Soldier. That's not what I'm saying. And I'm also not necessarily saying that I love one of those better than the other. I'm just saying that when they're trying to make a point,
Winter Soldier better than Birdman.
No. What he's saying, it's the same argument we make with movies that satirize horror films, and that you can't just lean on the comedy. You actually have to be a decent horror film as well. I think what you're saying is that your problem was it had these moments where it was dissecting and satirizing superhero films without delivering things that stand on the same level as superhero films is criticized.
I guess I would agree with if I didn't feel like that's only a very small part of what this movie is actually.
I felt like it was emblematic of the problem with the film is that it kept trying to do these things that were really, really magnanimous and huge, even from just from a subject standpoint. I felt like it was trying to make these really good points and you know, to go back to the very beginning of this conversation, when you said you felt this was like the movie where he finally made it, I still feel like this movie was him trying really hard and not pulling it off.
See, it's funny. That's how I feel about all his other films. I'm like, this is really good, but it's not great. Like all his other films, like really good, not quite great. This is the one I thought went to great. But let's go to final thoughts and start with JC.
I mean, I really enjoyed the hell out of it just from, you know, everything that was being presented, the way I felt like the story was told, to me, despite there being one or two instances where I did notice like a flubbed line, I think it's just kind of the nature of the way this film was shot. Yeah, it was really ambitious, and I think it kind of hit everything I was looking for when I went into it. A lot of people I really like turned in some really great performances. Like, I'm a big Naomi Watts fan, even though she hasn't done very much lately. I thought Emma Stone completely nailed this role, and yeah, it's the best thing that Michael Keaton's ever done. As far as, like, just, you know, a dramatic performance, and almost two performances in one where he's doing the voice of Birdman. Yeah, I mean, I would give this 8 out of 10, bird noise. I was going to try and make the bird noise, but I can't do it. 8 out of 10 bird noises.
Michael?
I think everybody should see this movie. Just because I didn't like it doesn't mean I don't think everybody should see this movie. I don't necessarily think that there was enough that I disliked about it that it shouldn't be notable and something that people remember. I agree. I think the performances a lot of the time are outstanding. Edward Norton and Emma Stone were actually, for me, above Michael Keaton's performances throughout the movie. And I think that it, like you said, from a cinematography standpoint and where they're moving the camera, it's almost unparalleled. I've seen single take movies, and I've seen single take movies do better than this, and I've seen single take movies do worse. But from a technical standpoint and from moving the camera in an interesting way, I think this takes the cake. But I think that the film, its biggest missteps are in its ambitions. I feel like in a completely unintended meta way, it's trying really hard to do something and it doesn't pull it off. I think it could have. I don't know how much more money or time they would have needed to throw at it to make it happen. It's not the best movie that's come out this year, which I've heard people say. And that's, I mean, you know, like I said, I think everybody should see it and make their own judgment on it, because it's hard for me to, with all the positive things you guys are saying that I'm like not disagreeing with, I just, they take a back seat to all the problems I saw watching Birdman. So that said, I'm going to have to give this 4 out of 10 Edward Norton erections.
Oh, yeah. Brian?
Yeah, I know. I think this is a really, this film is beautiful to the point of being poetic, but it's a really sad poem. It's almost like a poem written in a suicide note. And the thing is, it's every bit as insightful and every bit as, like I said before, just soul-bearing as, you know, some films we've seen like JCVD. And you get the sense that Michael Keaton, this is no small amount of autobiography here, and yet it has a wider meaning for the entire climate of film right now, which I think is really fascinating. And not only the climate of film, just the climate of artistic expression right now, which I think is really fascinating. And as far as the visual signature of the movie, there are points when I really noticed it and it flowed. Like, I think it's very apropos that jazz is the predominant musical choice throughout the movie, because jazz is all about improvisation, much like the theater is often about improvisation. So, and it made even the visual signatures seem like something improvised, something that wasn't planned, something that literally and sincerely followed somebody through their life without any kind of notion of where it was going, which it may either result in it feeling rambling to you, or it may feel like, you know, you're along with this character, as Michael said, who knows where he wants to go but doesn't know how to get there. So I really loved that. And then there were parts where I didn't even notice it anymore, where I was so enthralled by the performance and by rooting for this guy and wanting him to make it that I didn't even notice anymore that, you know, it wasn't cutting away from the action. And I think it has a very heartwarming ending that you are going to have arguments about. You're going to have a lot of arguments about what this film really means and what that ending means. And I think that's great. I don't know that I would call this the best film I've seen this year. I do think there are points where it is a little bit indulgent, perhaps. It goes on a little too long, but it's a very slight criticism. I think overall, I would have to give this 8 out of 10 Tobey Maguire's, because I'm pretty sure this movie is a portent for Tobey Maguire's future. I think Michael Keaton is playing a very prescient version of what Tobey Maguire will eventually be.
You know, I'm the guy who's going to call it the best movie of the year. I really did. I found this absolutely electrifying. We haven't even mentioned how funny this movie is.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many scenes in here I found just laughed out loud, and not in the set up the joke, here's the joke, in a sort of like Michel Gondry on Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind type of funny. Just weird things like you're right, it's got a jazziness to the whole thing, and that sense of like, you know, you don't know where it's going to go, and that, like, we're just playing off the top of our heads, but we're really good at what we're doing. So if we make a mistake, we'll just fuse it into the whole as a piece, and it'll work that way. There's a scene where, you know, you're hearing the jazzy music and this jazz drummer, and they're walking down the street, and there's the jazz drummer there sitting there playing, and it's so jarring for a second because you forgot that there was a soundtrack, that it was, you know, that there's a difference between that. I love those moments in this film so much. I love the performances so much. It's one of the films I most look forward to rewatching this year. I love Ed Norton, who is really the comic relief more than anyone here, who is, if anything, playing a satire of who he's reported to be as an actor, you know, which makes you wonder how much of that is actually true and how much is just people playing it up for the sake of media fun. Yeah. But, yeah, he plays himself as this complete pretentious prick with a big prick. I loved the shit out of this, and I am going to give it 10 out of 10 hyperbolic Chris reviews.
Well, it's about time we got one of those.
Yeah. Ahem. My apologies to Michael.